Hi folks, welcome to the Money 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 podcast. I'm Surabhi Upadhyay and we come to you every week with some very interesting conversations to help you get your personal finances in order and get smart with your money. The world of debt mutual funds has gone through a major churn over the last 12 to 15 months. The dust is still settling. As a result, we've seen a little bit of new regulation also come in. And a lot of first-timers who were just beginning to dabble in this new universe of debt mutual funds, trying to move beyond fixed deposits, are fairly confused. Where do you even begin? Is credit risk a bad thing? Should you now look at only government funds or gilt funds? What happens to interest rate risk then in an environment where interest rates are going down? It can be a confusing and daunting world out there, which is why this week we discuss debt mutual funds threadbare, talk about all the risks associated with the products and why perhaps they still make some sense for your portfolio. I have with me Nasir Saleem of Flexi Capital joining us on the show this week. Nasir, thank you so much for joining in. Appreciate you being here in the studios. So as I mentioned, you know, it's a little unfortunate the way I see it, because over the last year and a half, when the conversation had just started moving to getting smart with your fixed income investment, the whole debt crisis blew upon us. Now, first things first, what is the feedback you've heard from your clients, people who have moved beyond fixed deposits? What are they saying now?
You see, Surabhi, I think, you know, where we are today, as far as information coming and the kind of flow which is coming to us from existing clients who invested in debt funds, they had a, you know, the anticipation was that they should be beating fixed deposit returns, IRD, by about 200 basis points, which is the entire discussion all around, right? If you have FD fetching you about 6%, a debt fund IRD will fetch you about 8% or so. You get a 3-year indexation benefit, and you know, all of that, you know, at the end of it, you get about 7.5 or 8%. Having said that, obviously, somewhere down the line, in the last 1.5 years especially, we've gone a little miss on that. And with specific mention, since you mentioned about credit risk funds, I think there we've obviously gone completely off the track, right? But having said that, I think it's very important for investors to understand, when they look at debt funds, it's very important for them to understand the risk that they're willing to take, Surabhi. Because FD is basically is a fixed deposit. It doesn't come in with much of risk. But if you compare it, and there is this myth, Surabhi, that investors feel, and advisors, I must tell you also, should be cautioned and should be educated to inform the investors that the risk involved in a debt fund is far more different than that of a FD, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole term fixed income, I think, is a bit of a misnomer in itself,
right? Absolutely.
There's nothing fixed about those returns.
There's nothing fixed at all, I must tell you, because it comes in with a huge amount of risks, and those are varied. Which we will discuss.
So, okay, where do we even begin? You know, earlier we had this 16 categories of debt mutual funds put out by the regulator in an effort to streamline the entire marketplace. Now, let's start talking about the basics. And this is a quick, you know, refresher classroom, Debt Funds 101, for those of you who are still first-timers into this world. There's the concept of accrual. There's the concept of duration. So you can choose to play on, you know, the yield that a certain bond is giving you, or you can choose to play on interest rates. That's duration.
Right. That's right.
So let's start from the beginning. How do you categorize the funds? And in terms of just the risk pyramid or the risk matrix, what is the highest and what's the lowest?
Okay, so that's a very important question, Surabhi. I think the first thing, before we get into specification of funds, I think it's important for us to understand, just going back to basics here, which is that it's we call it the ICL term, which is basically interest rate, risk, credit risk, and liquidity risk. And these three risks are pertinent and will remain always relevant when you choose a particular debt fund.
Sure.
I'll explain each of these in one line. Interest rate risk is basically risk which is associated with the interest rates and the economy, right? And with changing interest rates, your return can also change. So interest rates, bond yields and prices have an inverse relationship historically, and that's the way they are. So if interest rates come down, bond prices go up and vice versa.
And those funds should then perform well. The
Absolutely.
Ones who are playing on this interest rate differential, as
Absolutely.
Bond prices surge because rates are falling, it's
Absolutely.
These funds that should do well.
Correct. Yeah. Then comes in the credit risk, which is basically where we're betting on credit, as the name in itself suggests to you, which is basically you're betting on a particular bond or a debenture, which could be rated double A or single A in order to get or optimize your returns on that particular bond.
Because it's probably going to be yielding much more than a normal GSEC would yield.
Absolutely. I mean, GSECs are typically what we call RFR, risk-free returns. And in you know, obviously, they come in with sovereign assurances and guarantee. I mean, the government of India, right, at the end of the day. So, and if you go into a single A bond, it'll obviously have a higher premium, which is why you end up getting a higher coupon, right? So a lot of investors need to understand that as well from a credit risk perspective. And last is liquidity risk, which again is very, very relevant and which is where we've been hit hardest in the last few weeks and the last 1 year or so. Because when a bond gets to mature, it's when it becomes liquid. And if liquidity is a challenge because of certain downgrades or defaults, how does one end up paying? Back to the investors. So the challenge remains there. But these three are very, very important. And when you look at the risk, entire risk category of, of debt funds, each of them need to be looked at with in the prism of each of these. As simply as that. So for example, a gilt fund will have a very high interest rate risk because they're betting on long-term gilt funds. I mean, it's a long-dated papers. Ideally, gilt are government of India bonds. But will have very low risk in terms of
Credit. Yeah, because it's sovereign at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Similarly, it will have very low liquidity risk because Government of India bonds are, I mean, they're tradable easily. And you will get money. Right? On the contrary, if you look at a credit risk fund, which is which we've been talking about now, those will have a higher interest rate risk because they're also, because they will be volatile because you're betting in 3 to 4 year kind of a paper. They'll also have high liquidity risk and they'll also end up having a higher credit risk as well, as the name suggests itself. So point is that if you compare these two, you will understand which category of investment are you actually able to invest suitably with respect to your ability to take risks.
So now, Nasser, as you explained to us, you know, you have different types, you have credit funds, you have, you know, government bond funds, etc. The question is, what should an investor ask himself or herself when he or she is to choose one of these funds? Should you ask yourself your risk profile, number of years of investment, does that matter? Where do you begin?
So, Surbhi, it's a combination of all of it put together. I think clearly we need to first understand your risk ability. So like an equity fund, as I mentioned to you, a debt fund is equally volatile. It depends on which risk category you are in as an investor.
So let's take medium risk for the purpose of our conversation right now, because most of our viewers don't want to go too high on the risk curve, I'm sure. And looking at medium risk, because you are moving away from fixed deposits, so you are obviously letting go of the safety aspect to an extent. So let's go with
If he had a medium risk ability client, I would suggest him, and if he's a first time money moving out of fixed deposits, I would recommend probably some, he should be ideally investing in the category of 1 to 3 years, which will basically be short-term debt funds, which can range from all the way up to 1 year, all the way up to 24 to 30 months. And gradually, as he upgrades himself in terms of getting these returns, he can also move into a medium-term category bond fund. But to start with, a medium-term investor should not look at any medium-term bond fund. He should stick to short-term income funds because they are lesser volatile. The return expectation is far more linear in terms of returns, and there is obviously lesser amount of credit risk that you're taking on those underlying bonds, on those papers.
But you'll have to sacrifice on the tax efficiency, though, because only kicks in after 3 years.
After 3 years.
That's when your returns look better.
Absolutely. Which is what we mentioned at the beginning, at the end, when I said that, you know, 3 year is an important time period that you need to necessarily hold these funds. But it's more important not to chase returns initially in order to actually first get stable returns. Get a grip on what you're doing first. Get your risk ability is very important to understand. Invest actively. And in a manner which is more cohesive to your inherent needs.
Now, before we carry on with the whole fund selection process, I also remember that SEBI came out with certain regulatory changes, new guidelines, after a lot of these credit events happened. I think it was August or September we started getting these new guidelines. What are the new rules? Do they make debt funds any more safer?
Okay, so Surbhi, I think, you know, that's the most important part. I feel, I think investors should be, you know, told. I think somewhere between the IL&FS crisis that happened in 2018, September, and to now, we had a lot of changes that came up in July 2019, which is just 4 months back. And I think, Surbhi, the biggest change that happened was in liquid funds, for example. Liquid funds are basically funds which invest in underlying bonds, mm-hmm. which are maturing within 91 days, ideally. You know, mm-hmm. between 91 days to about maximum 120 days.
Okay.
And we saw certain defaults happening there, which was unexpected, mm-hmm. frankly. Mm-hmm. And therefore, SEBI came in and said, the first change that they made was that liquid funds should not be investing. They need to necessarily have 20% of their holdings in cash, stroke okay. cash equivalents, okay. which is G-Secs, mm-hmm. stroke treasury bills, mm-hmm. because those are very, very liquid in nature.
Sure, sure.
That's the first big change that happened.
Okay.
Number two, I think clearly they've also brought in now sector exposures, caps. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So basically what they're saying is that you can't, at an overall debt mm-hmm. portfolio level, you should not be going more than 20% at a particular exposure mm-hmm. for a sector. Mm-hmm. On top of that, mm-hmm. where we've seen maximum amount of liquidity squeeze is HFCs, which is housing mm-hmm. finance companies.
Yeah.
And there, Surbhi, they've actually brought in a 10% cap.
So the investment in HFC paper can't be more than 10%.
Absolutely. Okay. Which is, again, I think a great change that they've mm-hmm. brought in. And I think one of the other big things that they've also brought in is that mutual fund investors and mm-hmm. through mutual funds, they were participating in basically securities, mm-hmm. which were through pledge shares. Mm-hmm. And there, the cover of yeah. these pledge shares earlier mm-hmm. was roughly in the range of about 1.3 to 1.5 times. Okay. That's now been changed, mandated mm-hmm. to be 4 times the risk cover.
Oh, okay.
Which basically means you have more collateral mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the case of a default or a risk
okay.
of default.
Okay.
So,
and these norms primarily apply only to liquid funds, all these changes that
no,
you're speaking of?
No, the mm-hmm. the first one that I mentioned, mm-hmm. which is 20% mandatorily to
in
liquid,
cash and cash equivalents,
yeah. those are only liquid.
For liquid
but
funds,
the otherwise,
yeah.
The other three are all across debt funds.
Okay, fair enough. So do you feel that they make, you know, this universe a little safer, relatively speaking?
Absolutely. You see, we've mm-hmm. seen a lot of, in my opinion, fund managers may have gone and chosen returns mm. over actually and in the event of beating returns and mm. competing with one another mm. may have lost the intent of the fund that mm. they've been originally which was mm. launched for mm. example mm. Highly surprising a mm. liquid fund mm-hmm. not being able to generate returns immediately mm-hmm. and mm. money not being given back to investors mm-hmm. could actually put you off the guard completely
okay.
right because that's ideally the starting point of investing. Mm. I mean, liquid mm-hmm. are very liquid in itself.
Sure.
So I think these changes are very good. They're mm. welcoming. I think also the fact is that when you're putting in these sector exposures, mm-hmm. You know, you have your checks and balances in place. And one last thing, which I forgot to mention, Surbhi, mm-hmm. is that they've also mandated the underlying securities mm-hmm. now to be only in listed papers. So it's listed NCDs also.
Okay.
Or listed treasury bills, whatever, okay. whichever papers that go in, mm-hmm. those have to be listed in nature.
Okay.
So that brings
so there
in
are no
more
off-market deals that, you know, those kind of transactions.
Yes,
those
it brings papers. In just more transparency, yeah, yeah. basically. Okay. So.
All right. So now before we complete this part of the conversation, let's just go back to the question. Now we're talking about an investor category, medium risk, new investors, where you said that the holding period should be 1 to 3 years.
Yeah.
So for this category of investors, if you could give some examples, some names of the AMCs that you think
sure,
still
sure.
make sense. Mm-hmm.
So, Surbhi, frankly, I'll tell you, if you look at the way clients mm-hmm. start to invest, mm-hmm. and the chain is very simple across various debt funds, mm-hmm. Somebody who's medium risk mm-hmm. will ideally start from, so I'm not saying all of it in liquid, but mm-hmm. it starts with liquid, then mm-hmm. it gradually goes up to medium term and stuff, because you mm-hmm. can't have everything in liquid, mm-hmm. right? You need mm-hmm. to ideally have a mix of liquid. Mm-hmm. For liquid is basically for, you know, urgent needs. And
sure.
everyone should have sure. liquid portfolios.
Sure.
It's important because
sure.
it
sure.
actually helps you get a better return than your money is lying in the savings bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
It's more diversified mm. as against one single bank account.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes in medium-term bond funds.
But we did see some blow-ups even in liquid funds.
Which is why the SEBI yeah. restrictions have come in now.
So right? hopefully so it should take care
absolutely,
of those things.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. So it starts with liquid funds.
And then you go up mm-hmm. to medium-term, basically.
Okay. Okay.
And in the medium-term category, Surbhi, we personally feel at Flexi mm-hmm. Capital mm-hmm. that you know, two fund houses which have stood out
mm-hmm.
in the worst of times mm-hmm. in terms of zero default, maybe one or two downgrades may have happened, but mm-hmm. they've had no impact mm-hmm. On default basically
mm-hmm.
Is the fact that you know it's Kotak
okay.
as an asset manager
mm-hmm.
and ICICI.
So when you say these are medium-term funds, these are medium-term bond funds?
These are medium-term bond funds.
Okay.
Surbhi, these basically invest 80% mm-hmm. between AAA and AA.
Okay.
And they also have very large AUMs currently.
Okay.
For example, the Kotak is currently at over 6,000 crores of AUMs.
Okay.
And so is the case with ICICI. That's also closer to about 4.5 to 5,000 odd crores of AUMs.
Okay.
So very large AUMs.
Okay.
The return expectation, the YTM, was what we chase in these returns, ideally, is the yield that you eventually get while you remain invested until the maturity of the bond is about, give or take, 9.6 to 9.7.
So that's how much you're hoping to make?
No, not exactly. Okay. That's actually the yield that you're chasing. Okay. Less expense. So you knock off your expense ratio, which is about 1.6 to 1.5. So you end up getting about 8.1, roughly.
Okay. And that with the indexation benefit?
Yeah, with the indexation benefit, you'll probably end up getting about 7.9 to about 7.95, ideally.
Okay. Okay.
Right? So closer to 8 is what we feel. And I think that is a fairly reasonable return.
Sure.
Given where we are on FDs, for example.
Sure. Now, I'm going to very quickly ask you just about two more categories before we move to, you know, the interest rate sensitive funds. Where does this leave FMPs, this great concept of fixed maturity plans? What's your take on them now? I don't know if there's a lot of regulation change that impacts them as well. And also the credit risk category per se. I do hear some, you know, contrarian views saying, oh, but now might be a good time for those who have the risk appetite. Now is the time because you can chase that high-yielding paper. Does any of it make sense to you?
See, I'll tell you, I think, frankly speaking, FMPs, fixed maturity plans, were very popular, right? And they used to give you this huge indexation benefit as compared to fixed deposits. I mean, you know, way back in 2005 and 6 when they became really popular, Surbhi. And people started putting in huge money because, you know, I mean, you ideally could get a better expectation in terms of yields. But I think the biggest challenge today, which we've seen over the last few months, is that FMPs typically invest in about 10 to 11 instruments, as against bond funds or debt funds, which invest in far more number of debt instruments.
Okay.
So the number of, it's more diversified in a sense.
Okay.
So if the impact happens in one particular bond, out of 10 funds, as against 30 or 40 funds, or 50 funds in a particular bond, as against an FMP, you know where you'll get hit the worst.
Sure.
You probably get hit more in an FMP category.
Okay.
Similarly, I think given the other credit risk funds, which you just mentioned, I think there again, you know, the ability to chase returns is something which governs your investment appetite into those funds. But again, we should be very cautious because what happens is would be is that if you're chasing returns in a credit risk fund and some of them have actually defaulted because they're investing in lower quality paper, the ones who exit, they obviously exit their money, but the ones who remain invested may get punished because the underlying exposure increases of those bonds which have defaulted.
Okay.
So I think it's a double whammy. We should be very, very cautious. In my opinion, we should just stick to, if you want to chase returns, please move to a different asset class.
Go to equity.
Go to equity. This is your risk profile.
Sure. Okay, now let's talk about, you know, the government bond funds or, you know, these medium-term duration funds where the play is on interest rates. Now, Nasser, everybody, all the wise men seem to suggest that we will get some more interest rate cuts in this environment. Is there any sense in looking at duration funds?
I think given where we are on the interest rates, we expect the MPC, Monetary Policy Committee, to actually look at another rate cut of about anything between 35 to 50 basis points until 31st March 2020 for this financial year. So, Ruben, I think, you know, given, again, risk appetite, and if you want to play some double-digit returns on debt, again, very cautiously, one can recommend dynamic bond funds. So these are basically a category of funds which invest in a mix of Government of India bonds, long-dated papers. The maturities of these, the average maturity is what we normally track their maturities on in the term of number of years, is between anything between 6 to 8 to 9 years, depending on which fund you choose. And I think these basically move between Government of India bonds and corporate debt.
All right.
So they swing in between these two.
Okay.
And that's why they call dynamic. So what happens is it's a very simple play when the fund manager feels that it's the right time to actually increase allocation to Government of India bonds because he expects the interest rates to come down, he'll obviously increase allocation to them and vice versa.
Okay.
So I think the play is far better here rather than taking a concentrated bet on gilt funds by and large or pure Government of India bond funds.
Okay.
So I think that could be a good play.
All
if you ask us, yes, it's a good recommendation. Again, basis your risk profile.
Now, what should be the return expectation here? And can returns in these dynamic bond funds be very volatile because of, you know, rate cycle changes?
Absolutely. I think that's a very key point, Surbhi. Given the fact that these are longer in duration, with any minor... So what we track basically them is a measure called modified duration, which basically measures the risk of change of the underlying bonds with respect to the interest rate changes.
Okay.
So it's basically like in equity, we track it to beta, beta of a particular fund. In the same scenario, it's modified duration.
Okay.
So obviously, the modified duration is far more higher in dynamic funds because of the sheer volatility increases because of the time frame that you're betting on.
Okay.
And therefore, they become more volatile.
So these are not for low-risk investors?
Not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, if...
Though they have an element of G-Secs and government bonds, they're still not... Bear that in mind, they're still not low-risk.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, because, you know, if you continue to hold them to maturity, then you'll get your coupon.
Sure.
But
sure.
in the interim, the yields keep fluctuating.
Yeah.
Depending on the interest rate scenario. So...
Okay, so we've discussed a whole host of issues, Nasser. So final tips, if you round it all up for us, what would you say are the key things to keep in mind if someone is dabbling into debt funds?
I think, Surbhi, three things, broadly. Number one, please check the underlying exposures of funds that you're being recommended, that you're getting into. I think it's very important to understand which category you're investing and does it suit your risk appetite. Number two, if you already invested in certain category of funds, please go back to your advisors and your financial planners, speak to them and understand where you are in terms of any papers which may have got downgraded and if there is any panic selling that may happen on those going forward. Because I think it's you'd rather be safe and secure rather than lose any money on capital.
Sure.
And my last thing is, of course, is that SEBI has introduced something called a riskometer. Okay. Which is ideally, you know, we track it normally to equity funds.
Equities, yeah.
But there's also those available now in debt funds as well.
Okay.
So, you know, your financial planner might come and tell you this is the, you know,
the best fund.
Best fund and the lowest risk. Please ask him, where's the riskometer on this?
Oh, that's an important one. I didn't know about the debt fund riskometer. That
Absolutely.
There's one out there. I'm going to look out for it as well.
Yes.
All right, been a good conversation, Nasser. Thank you very much for putting out all the latest developments in the fixed income mutual fund world out there for us.
Thank you, Surbhi. Lovely being here.
That's it on this week's podcast. You can catch the show at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesdays with repeats on Saturday and Sunday mornings only on CNBC TV 18. You can also find us on the CNBC TV 18 YouTube channel. Do send your feedback, comments, queries. Catch me on Twitter. My handle is at Surabhi Upadhyay. That's S-U-R-A-B-H-I-U-P-A-D-H-Y-A-Y. Don't forget to add the hashtag money. Catch you next week.